It's The Record from KUOW. I'm Marcy Silman. What leads a person with radical politics to take an extreme step to spy against their own country? And what might lead that same person to reverse course to later become a super patriot? David Hyde brings us this strange story of Duncan Lee.
It was big news all over the country when Seattle recently elected a socialist to the city council. Socialism isn't very common these days, but it was a lot more common back in the 1930s. A lot of people called themselves socialists. Others even became communists, like Duncan Lee. But very, very few took the next step that he took. It was more of a leap, really, in a completely different direction to spy against the United States for the Soviet Union. And the interesting thing about Lee's story is that he changed direction again entirely in a whole different direction to later become a fierce cold warrior. Mark A. Bradley's written a book about it. It's called A Very Principled Boy. And one of the big questions Bradley tries to answer is why Duncan Lee became a spy in the first place.
I think it was a realization that his moment had come. He had been searching for something and searching for a way to serve mankind. And oddly enough, back in the 1930s and certainly in the early 40s, there were many Americans who believed the Soviet Union was the best last hope for mankind because of its strong stance against fascism and also its ability to ward off what seemed to be the Great Depression. And when Lee decided to become a spy, the Soviet Union was under great pressure because it had been invaded by Adolf Hitler in June of 1941. So Lee saw himself as stepping forward to save not only the great Soviet experiment, but also mankind itself.
And he was a student at Oxford at that point, right?
He was had just gotten out of Oxford. He was at Oxford from 1935 until 1938. And in 1938, he was a Sterling Fellow at Yale Law School. He was there from 38 to 39. And then he joined the Communist Party of the United States of America while at Yale. So that would have been in 1939.
And as you mentioned, lots of Americans at that time were critics, at least of free market capitalism in its present form. It had failed a lot of people. A lot of people were out of work. Some of them became socialists. Others became communists. But almost nobody took this extreme radical step in a completely different direction to be, actually spy against their own country. What caused him to do that?
It's an enormous step to take. I think, again, it was just having the opportunity to do it. You know, Donovan, William J. Donovan, head of the OSS, saw Lee as almost an adopted son. They were very close personally. And, you know, when Donovan offered Lee, a chance to become one of his top assistants, Lee jumped at it. And, you know, again, he thought his moment had come. You know, Lee's heritage, was extraordinarily unique. He came from the Lees of Virginia. And you had two of those Lees, Richard Henry Lee, who was he was one of Duncan's great-great-great-grandfathers, was one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. And what did he do? He rebelled against his own government. And then Duncan was also collaterally related to Confederate General Robert E. Lee. Duncan's great-grandfather was Robert E. Lee's first cousin. So there was, a bit of heritage in the family of standing up for your principles, even if it meant rebelling against your own country.
Mark A. Bradley is with us. He's a former CIA intelligence officer who now works as a lawyer in the Justice Department. He's telling us about the strange case of Duncan Lee, who was a spy for the Soviet Union and later became a cold warrior. And I want to get to that in a minute. But first, just who was he as a young man? You mentioned his ancestry, but what was he like as a young man, and what did his parents teach him?
His parents were missionaries in China. Father was there from 1902 until 1928. His mother was there from 1911 until 1927. And they were people who devoted their lives to serving something much greater than themselves. And by that, I mean by trying to bring Christianity to the Chinese. Lee's father had fallen under an evangelical movement while at the University of Virginia in the 1890s, something called the Student Volunteer Movement for Foreign Missions. And the motto of that organization was to evangelize the world in this generation. The idea was is that the message of the Bible had to be preached, and once it was preached, then Christ could return as foretold in the book of Revelations. So, his parents were almost otherworldly people in a way. I mean, they set an extraordinarily high bar for their son because they expected him also to find his own way to serve mankind. I mean, it was clear that a selfish life would not do, that he had to devote himself to serving something much larger than himself. That said, he knew he wasn't himself cut out to be a missionary, but, he was expected to find something to dedicate his life to.
Were his parents at all political? Where did his politics come from?
His politics, you know, that's a very interesting question. I mean, his parents were certainly left-leaning. They voted for Norman Thomas, you know, against FDR in 1932.
And he was the socialist candidate?
Socialist, that's absolutely right. But it was, you know, kind of a moderate type of socialism. I mean, certainly communism, with its anti-religious component, wasn't their cup of tea. Mm. They would be left of center, but they weren't, you know, they were more interested in saving souls than they were in devoting themselves to politics.
Mark Bradley's new book is called A Very Principled Boy, about a man who spied for the Soviet Union against the United States, later became a Cold Warrior. When did his spying career come to an end?
Ended in late 1944. I think by then, Lee knew a couple things. He knew that the Allies were going to win the war. You know, we still had a ways to go, but Hitler and the Japanese were certainly on the ropes. He also was becoming increasingly scared about getting caught. Some of the information he had passed to the Soviets in Moscow was now being parroted back by the Soviets to Washington. So he was seeing some of his information coming back in OSS reports. And he was terrified that somebody was going to say, you know what, that's our information. How did the Soviets get a hold of that? And also, too, you know, I think by that time he began to have what I call in the book a crisis of conscience. You know, I think his missionary past finally caught up with him. In March of 1945, he had his last meeting with his third Soviet handler, and he told the handler that he couldn't go on anymore. His conscience was unclean about what he had done. And so I think it was, you know, kind of a confluence of those three things that finally forced him to give it up. His handler sent a cable back to Moscow saying that Lee seemed to be on the verge of collapse. Moscow center said, okay, put him on ice for a while, but we're not going to let him go. We'll use him as a spotter inside the OSS or, you know, its successful organizations. So they still had plans for Lee, even though he told them he didn't want to continue on.
So he gave it up. Did he ever get caught? Did he ever admit to being a spy?
No, he never did. You know, the fascinating thing about Lee was that the FBI, what later became the National Security Agency, and the Department of Justice were absolutely convinced that he had done what Elizabeth Bentley, his main handler who defected to the FBI, said that he had done. But we were never able to catch him. Lee was very, very smart. He never passed any documents directly to the Russians. He memorized them. So he didn't have the same problem that Alger Hiss had with Whitaker Chambers when Chambers produced the so-called pumpkin papers. So basically, I mean, it was Lee's word against hers. What he didn't know is that in 1943, the United States government had started a code-breaking program aimed at the Soviet Union. Our fear in 1943 was that Stalin would do what Lenin had done after he came to power in 1917, which was to take Russia out of the war. And you have to remember, you know, and these are rather staggering figures, but the Soviets lost roughly 27 million people in World War II. 11 million of those were lost on the battlefield. In the United States, we lost about 406,000, slightly over that. The Russians killed, out of every five German soldiers killed, they killed four. So they were bearing the brunt of the war. It was absolutely critical to keep them into the fighting. Yeah, there was, a deliberate decision made by the Roosevelt administration that given Stalin's paranoia, I mean, after all, he had slaughtered over a million of his own people, that it wasn't a wise thing to upset him by any espionage trials. And so there was a deliberate decision made by the U.S. government. We weren't going to have espionage trials against any Soviet spies during World War II because we didn't want Stalin saying, wait a minute, I'm bearing the brunt of the war, and you're sitting here in Washington prosecuting my people.
Mm. What are the lessons, if you just had to sum it up, what are the lessons for you in this story about Duncan Lee and about that? What conclusions do you draw about the reasons for his betrayal and its significance for our own time?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, Lee would fall into the category of being an ideological spy. I mean, he wasn't motivated like many of the modern ones we've had, you know, post-World War II by money, revenge, ethnic loyalty, narcissism, that kind of thing. He was, you know, more motivated by a cause. That said, though, you know, we are still very much concerned in the U.S. intelligence community about the insider threat. And, you know, you're always looking for people who don't believe in their oaths that they take, you know, when they accept one of these very sensitive U.S. Security positions. Another lesson that I, you know, regrettably saw in this book was a repetition of what happened so often in Washington. That's the politicization of national security. I mean, in 1948, the House of Un-American Activities Committee, you know, had a wonderful opportunity to really do some serious investigation about a massive national security, breach. Instead, they were more interested in trying to tar Harry Truman and the Democrats. And, you know, you still, time to time, I mean, fortunately not like that, but nevertheless, I mean, politics and national security really should be separated. And that's something we should always remember.
Mark Bradley is author of the book A Very Principled Boy, The Strange Story of Duncan Lee. He spoke with David Hyde. It's The Record from KUOW.